Wolltest du auch schon immer ein mutiger Polizist werden? Und den allertiefsten Dschungel erforschen? Ganz allein verlorene Goldschätze finden? Und an den größten Dreckschrauben, die die Welt je gesehen hat? Dann ist die D-Max DNA bestimmt auch ein Teil von dir. Denn bei D-Max fängt jede Geschichte mit dir an.
Im Herbst erwarten dich neue Serien-Highlights, spannende Abenteuer und Adrenalin pur. Freu dich auf neue Staffeln von Erfolgsformaten wie Germinator, Steel Buddies, 112, Feuerwehr im Einsatz sowie zahlreiche Neustarts wie Feuerwache 3, Alarm in Rostock. Nur auf D-Max und bereits 7 Tage vor Ausstrahlung auf Discovery Plus.
Vivaldi or Beastie Boys?
Oh, this is a difficult one. Oh, why shouldn't we match them both? No, I have to choose. Beastie Boys. Let's do Beastie Boys.
Erstklassisch mit Mischke, der musikalische Podcast des Hamburger Abendblatts.
Guten Tag zu einer neuen Folge. Ich bin jetzt heute mal in der Hafencity, aber nicht in der Elbphilharmonie. Mein Gast ist jemand, der viel höher singt als viele andere und das aber mit einem ungewöhnlichen Repertoire. Morgen, dieser Zeitrechnung nach, hat er ein Konzert in der Elbphilharmonie. Wir haben uns heute getroffen, oder besser gesagt, wir treffen uns heute. Vielleicht haben Sie ihn schon mal gesehen oder vielleicht haben Sie ihn zuletzt gesehen bei der Eröffnung der Olympischen Spiele in Paris. Bei der Eröffnungsfeier war er dabei und hat in strömendem Regen Rameau gesungen. Und jetzt singt er hier in der Elbphilharmonie andere barocke Dinge. Und es handelt sich um den polnischen Countertenor Jakub Józef Orliński. Ich versuch's mal. Dobry dzień. Ja. This was supposed to be guten Tag.
Guten Tag. That was a very long guten Tag, but I take it. Okay. I take it.
Fine. Thank you for having me. The first thing I wondered was, because everybody talks about you having this breakdance career and doing dancing on stage as well. So what did you learn from Baroque opera for breaking? And what did you learn from your dancing for Baroque opera? Because it's so much different.
It is so much it lays in a different, two different worlds. But at the same time, once you start doing it, and I think it's with a lot of things in your life, when you start doing them, at the first sight, they don't look like they actually match or they have something in common. But actually, they do, and they do quite a lot. And it's sometimes I think that they really do have a lot of things in common, and sometimes I think my brain just makes it happen and like creates those connections and makes it work for me. So first of all, the common thing is the freedom. I find a lot of freedom in music, especially in Baroque music. There is a lot of place where you can write your own ornamentation. You have the freedom of interpretation. And then in breaking is the same. Like, you can make one move in 1,000 different ways and nobody will tell you that it's right or wrong. This is your style, this is your flavor. So you just bring something new to the table. And this is something that is really, really a common ground that I sometimes take from one art form to another. So like when I dance to a certain music and I feel something, I'm like, oh wow, I would love to feel this way when I'm on stage singing this piece of music, or like, you know, those kind of things. But then also you have the sort of different forms of expression which are fulfilling and actually building this one personality, which is me. But on the music level, you have this sonority. You want to make people feel something because of your sound, because of your interpretation of your ornaments and your artistic vision, which is in my case all of those sometimes obscure albums.
By the way, did you have a chance to see the competition in Paris, the breaking competition?
I did watch it, the whole thing. Okay. I was not there because I was on tour, but I did watch the whole thing and it was incredible. I mean, absolutely insane. You know, the thing is that like I know those dancers, like some of them are my friends, like Kuzia from Ukraine. He's my friend, like he lives in Warsaw, like we train together. And to see him on this stage first time in history breaking at the Olympic Games. It was, for me, it was like I was like really in emotions. Like really, it was like it took me over a little bit because it's something completely different than a breaking competition that usually happens.
Going back into your career, I read, if it's true, that you discovered when you were 8 that you could sing higher than the other guys in the choir.
Absolutely not true.
Okay. But sometime, there was a point in your life when you discovered that you can sing differently than other boys can. Was it like, oh, I'm different, I don't know whether I should like this or not? Or was it like the joy of your life to see I can do something that nobody other can, nobody else can?
I have to say this is a completely different story. Okay. But I love that you've heard that. Eh?
I don't know, wrong archive.
No, the thing is that like I really, I was a boy. So like every boy sings high. Like this is the before you go through puberty, you sing sure. high. Mm-hmm. And I was actually not singing higher than other boys. They were singing higher than me. So that's why I was in the alto section. For a brief moment, I was in the soprano section, but I was not doing great there because I was struggling. So I was mostly in the alto section. And then when we all went through puberty, my kind of change went quite quickly. It was, you know, sometimes people, men have this this problem that like really the change takes a year, and for a year they like really struggle with even talking because the voice breaks. So in my case, it took like, I don't know, a few months, and I was already like very, very, you know, proper in the new ground of using my voice. And I was singing in a bass baritone section because we decided from this big choir to establish a smaller ensemble group. So we sang only medieval chants and we needed bass baritone and tenor. So I was in the middle section and we loved it. It was super cool. There were 9 of us. Wow, super cool music. But then we moved on to Renaissance pieces and we needed those 2 high voices. And we made a lottery, and me and my friend Piotr, we were the youngest ones, and we lost that lottery, so we think that the lottery was manipulated. But I started singing as a countertenor back then, when I was exactly 16, and I did not know that this is a countertenor voice. I did not know that this is a falsetto technique. I truly did not know what's happening. I was just singing high. Mm-hmm. So I was just trying to match the others in the ensemble, because in the choir, in the vocal ensemble, this is the thing. Like that's the point. Like you have to build one organism and one sound. And sometimes, from time to time, when you sing a different sort of type of pieces, like we sang some songs by Beatles arranged for vocal ensembles, then of course you have to be the soloist sometimes, and sometimes you are the accompaniment. Mm-hmm. So that was how I kind of discovered my voice, and then along, I knew that this is the voice that actually makes me feel happy, satisfied, and I feel through it. So when I feel something and I see a piece of music, I can say something with my music using that voice, not bass baritone, just the countertenor.
Mentioning happy, your father.
Wolltest du auch schon immer ein mutiger Polizist werden? Ui, 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 ui. Und den allertiefsten Dschungel erforschen? Wow. Ganz allein verlorene Goldschätze finden? Ding. Und an den größten Dreckschrauben, die die Welt je gesehen hat? Oh, ja. Dann ist die D-Max DNA bestimmt auch ein Teil von dir. Denn bei D-Max fängt jede Geschichte mit dir an.
Im Herbst erwarten dich neue Serien-Highlights, spannende Abenteuer und Adrenalin pur. Freu dich auf neue Staffeln von Erfolgsformaten wie Germinator, Steel Buddies, 112, Feuerwehr im Einsatz, sowie zahlreiche Neustarts wie Feuerwache 3, Alarm in Rostock. Nur auf D-Max und bereits 7 Tage vor Ausstrahlung auf Discovery Plus.
If that's not wrong again, is doing graphic design, your mother is
so
a sculptor.
Sorry, I didn't want no to pinch you to like, no, oh, that's wrong.
No, no problem. But if I'm not wrong, your mother is a sculptor and your father does graphic design. So what was their reaction when you came and told them, I want to be a singer? Did they think, oh, we planned him to be become a doctor, a lawyer, something decent, something regular, you know, and now he's coming and telling us he's going to be an artist.
That's a very good question. To be fair, I think my father had more objections than my mom, because they both always supported me in whatever I was, you know, trying, because I was trying a lot of things. I was like in the choir since I was 8-9 years old, but they like gave me the opportunity to try playing tennis. I went to do capoeira. I was, you know, for the longest time I was skating. Like I was doing first rollerblading, then skateboarding, then acrobatics, you know, then, you know, I started with also with breaking when I was 18, and they were all like, okay, you try your things. You see what you like, what you don't like. And then when I finished my high school, I really did not know what to do with my life. Like, you know, my mom is a sculptor and a painter. My father, graphic designer, painter. From the father's side, my grandma is a prosthetic, so she makes fake teeth. Mm-hmm. So it's also kind of sculpturing. My grandpa, an architect. And from my mom's side, my grandma, who unfortunately passed away a few years back, she also was an architect. So, like, it's all visual arts. So they understood that probably I will maybe be interested in some artsy thingies. But I didn't know what to do, so I went to the University of Music. I didn't get in, and there was a huge long story. But for the first 3 years of studying at the university, I did not know that this is going to be my living. I did not, because I was not good. I was just like, not only I was the only one to pay for the studies, because like the rest was on the, let's say, stationary system. So you get in, you don't pay, you study. I was the one, you know, behind the line. So so I had to pay for my studies for 3 years. And I did not know that this is going to be it. I really put my whole energy into it, to study and to learning about music. But I did not know that this is going to be my life. But after the third year, when I started traveling a little bit more, I was like, okay, I want to do that. Whatever it takes, I mean, I can do it on the ground of just like in Poland or whatever. I want to try. So my mom and my father, I think they were a little bit scared. Because, you know, it's like when you're a parent, of course you want your kid to be happy, but also to live comfortably. And, you know, my parents live a comfortable life, but I wouldn't say that they have a lot, you know. They're freelancing, and it's not easy, and that's why they were scared. They were just scared that I'm going to end up like kind of barely making it from one end to another. And this is very natural, but some, like at some point when I started doing, like at the beginning, my first like international production was actually exactly 10 years ago in Aachen, 2014. So,
another question, because you're the one singing, not me. You're standing on the stage, not me. There's hardly anything in music that's more artificial in a way than a Baroque aria. Why do you think does this music go straight to your heart like nothing else?
I think that
although it's that artificial and that complicated and...
But, you know, there is something artificial and complicated, but at the same time, it's not artificial at all because it's the voice. The voice, sound of the voice is something which I think is the closest to your soul. It comes from your body, from your heart, and can touch exactly the same places. And that's why, like, I think with the voice, it has the power to move and to touch people. And even though sometimes the arias are super complicated and they last for 12 minutes, like in Vivaldi's, you know, operas, but in some way, I feel like certain compositions are made in a way, in a rhetorical way, that even though you have no idea about music, about Baroque music even more so, and about the text, you will feel something, like it will grab you, touch you. And this is something that, like, I love also about Baroque music. It's just so close to our emotional system that even like my friends who are from the breaking world, and I invited them, for example, to listen to one of my shows or to Orfeo Euridice, they were mesmerized. They were like, oh my gosh, I did not know that I need this kind of art form, and this is a completely new experience.
Mm.
So I do feel like there is something difficult about this art form, but also our job as performers is to make it sound super easy and make it feel like it's like very approachable. Oh.
Mm. A technical and maybe stupid question. You're singing higher than a regular tenor. Does it take you longer to just relax and to come back to your normal status of a healthy voice? Does it take you longer than a regular tenor to just refresh again after a performance?
I think it's a very individual thing, because it can be, you know, it's also depending what you're singing, with whom you are singing, where you are singing. It all depends, because of course technique is technique, like you have to have a good technique. But at the same time, it's sometimes you sing with a small group and you don't need to like produce so much sound. But sometimes you are singing with a huge orchestra in a big place, doing a lot of things on stage, and it just takes a lot of energy. Sometimes you are just standing, sometimes you have to do a lot of things when you are playing at the opera. So it really, really depends. I think tenors have the hardest time. At least that's what I noticed out of the experience. But with my case, it's just, you have to be smart with choosing what material you are singing. This is something that I got as a wisdom from my mentor, Eitan Pessen, and he actually saved my life, because at the beginning, when I was singing and I got an offer after singing in Frankfurt, Rinaldo, which was perfect for my voice, I got an offer to right away sing Orlando. Orlando is one of the most dramatic Handelian roles. It's very low, very dramatic. And he said, like, don't take it. And I was like, yeah, I have to take it. This is Frankfurt. I love it. Blah, blah, blah. You know, they want me now. If I say no, they won't ask me ever again. You know, those are the regular things that you ask yourself when you are a young singer. And then he said, like, don't take it. You're going to force your voice in a way that, like, maybe you will manage to sing the whole, you know, the whole production. But then or you destroy your voice, or you will have to have, like, I don't know, a few months of recovery. So this is very, very important, to choose the right material at the right point of your career, because otherwise it might be much shorter than you think.
What's the worst moment for you? Having to go on a stage or having to leave a stage?
Actually, none of that. Okay. Because I'm always a little bit stressed. I think that's the thing. Like, I'm always stressed. If it's Elbphilharmonie and or Carnegie Hall, or if I sing in a room like this, because with my pianist we did in New York quite few all of those club recitals in somebody's apartment. Like, it's literally for 7 or 12 people. So you have to use your voice differently, but like, it's always stressful. But I think this stress comes because you care, and then you can learn how to sort of make it a motivational stress. And then leaving the stage is also actually kind of fun, because if you do your job and you do put a lot of work into your job, then you feel satisfied. Most of the time you feel satisfied and you are happy. So like, I'm always happy to like go off and actually be out of this zone of performance and be like, wow, yes, I did it, I made it.
Do you ever look at later repertoire, like Mozart or even later? There's so many women roles in that kind of opera that could be sung by you theoretically, but it's a larger orchestra, it's a different style. Is this something you never think about of, oh, I'm done with Baroque, I'll try to move forward and go into that kind of area?
I mean, to be fair, I do that all the time. I sing contemporary things, I sing romantic things. I recorded a full album of art songs from like basically 19th century, the end of 19th century until the modern times. So it's not that I'm only singing Baroque. It's just people know me from Baroque things because, of course, I'm a countertenor. I'm expected to sing Baroque music. So I do. But I do sing, I did sing a Mozart opera, Mitridate Re di Ponto. Unfortunately, okay. it was cancelled. So you, okay. Probably that's why you didn't know it, because it was in Berlin Staatsoper. Yeah. But it was cancelled literally a week before the premiere because of coronavirus. So it was, I think, still 2021. And it was like a second, third, or fourth wave, whatever. But yes, I am. I'm very happy to sing other things. And even with my friend Yanis François, we look for things which are maybe not Mozart, but from classical period or like some kind of Rococo period. So it's a classic-y thingy, but with completely new composers. Because I love to actually find new things. There is so much that we don't know. And so much, there's so much to discover. And like, you know, I do all of those albums, and with Anima Sacra, Anima Eterna, Faccia d'Amore, Beyond, all of those things, they contain so much new music, and even composers that my friends who are, you know, specialists on Baroque music, they're like, wow, I did not know about this guy. Mm. So it is fun to discover those composers.
Since you mentioned albums, your new album, I thought when I looked at the concept, it's a mix of, you know, what's it like? I mean, I it's hard for me to describe what this new album is about. It's Baroque, but it's not. It's jazz, but it's not. It's crossover in a way, but it's not. So what's the general
idea?
It's
a very difficult thing, as I like to discuss it actually with Alexander, because it's not a solo album, it's a duet album with Alexander Dembic. He's my really good friend. We studied together in Warsaw. Then we had contact with each other, but we never done anything. But now for 4 years, we are doing a lot of things, concerts and projects. And this one is a fruit of those few years of actually experimenting with music. It's just like, you know, when we were all closed in our houses, in our homes, we were meeting and we were just making music. And it brought us to a place that we wanted to do something as, like that's why it's called Let's Baroque. It's really somehow covers. Ah, this is the word that I like to use. Those are covers of Baroque songs. Because this is exactly like, for example, if you are a newcomer artist from the, let's say, pop world, and, I don't know, you want to pay tribute to, I don't know, Madonna or I don't know, Elvis Presley, they are making covers of their songs just to pay tribute, not to make it better. It's just to make it different, to show how much they love this artist, how much they actually appreciate and, I don't know, they feel the need to do it. So this is what I felt with Alexander, to maybe put the Baroque music a little bit on the other ground to show people how actually close, and that Baroque music was the entertaining music of their times, and to just use new tools to show people how close it is to whatever, you know, pop world and the entertaining world is. So those are the covers.
Okay. Something completely different, because I'm really curious to find out about that. You're still living in Warsaw, right?
Yes.
Okay. What's it like now in Warsaw, in Poland, after the election, as an artist, as somebody who works in a creative way? Is it like, I don't know, a new dawn, a new sunset, a new kind of fresh air that's come into the country after the old government was sent home? What's it like in the art scene?
It's very difficult for me to say, because I'm not really using the opportunities in Poland, because I don't sing there. Like, I am almost never there. I have my apartment there, I have my family there, but to be fair, I'm not the right person to ask, because like 95 or 98% of my work is abroad, which is kind of sad, but like, there are institutions that are getting money from the state, from the region, from European Union, and they are doing well. They are really, really doing well. They have the money to invite international artists. So I cannot really give you the proper answer, like, because it's just not that, like, I did not feel it back then, and I'm not really feeling a bigger change now, because I'm just not there.
Okay, so let's get back to music then, in a way. What's it like whenever you're in a production, in an opera production, I guess, or many of your colleagues on stage in the team, in the ensemble, think, oh, there's this breakdance guy again. He's going to dance, he's going to steal the show. Is it like that? Or?
It's actually funny that you say that, but, you know, fortunately, I am working with really, like, good people, and kind of, the thing is that, like, back, like, I don't know, 2014, or when I started doing opera productions, of course it was something new, that, like, there was this new guy who came, he's very physical, blah, 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 he can do this and he can do that, he can sing, blah, blah, blah. So back then I felt more of that. But now everybody knows that, like, if they hire me, they hire me for my voice and for the things that I can do. It's not only that, like, oh, we need to have a countertenor, so, oh, let's take this one. No, and, like, this is why it's kind of an advantage that I created work for myself and I created those projects for myself. And now, not to brag, but they choose me and they do a production sometimes around me, like the Olympiade by Vivaldi in Paris. It was from the very beginning, the stage director wanted to do this piece in the period of preparation for the Olympic Games, so because that was literally like a month and a half before the Olympic Games started, and he knew that, like, I want to have Jakub because I want to, like, show on stage like a dance battle, and I want something very physical, I want something very challenging that not many singers can do, so I want him. And then he was like, oh, and I want another physical singer, Marina Viotti, she's phenomenal, super good voice, and also very physical and committed to what she does. So, boom, those two characters, I want them in this production. And then around that, he was choosing other singers. So this is actually fun, because then you start kind of fulfilling your idea as a stage director with people that you know that they can do what you want. And not like, no, I'm not going to do this. This is too difficult. I'm not going to move. Take a double or whatever. So it's actually fun, but I don't know. It's difficult also to say if people are like as you said, oh no, this guy again, he's going to steal the show. To be fair, I'm not doing that much of operas, unfortunately, because first of all, in major houses, they book you in 3-4 years in advance. And when I was booked for the Met, for exactly the Berlin, or in some other places, it was all cancelled. It was all cancelled because of COVID. And then I decided by myself and with my manager later on that I don't want to waste 2 months of my life when, like, already three Met productions, one production in Berlin, they were all cancelled, and I spent so much time preparing for it, and then you lose 2 months of your life because, like, what to do? Like, and it's all already booked up, so you cannot work, and I want to work, you know? Mm.
One thing I'd like to talk about as well before we end up, in a way, is fear. I know that you're not nearly as old as Placido Domingo, but he changed, he stepped back from singing tenor roles to baritone. As a countertenor, is there the fear in your head louder than maybe in regular tenors that I'm singing so high, it's more stress on my voice maybe than for a regular tenor? Is there a fear that you might burn out faster than a regular tenor, that you might need to think about stepping back, doing less earlier than a regular tenor?
To be fair, it all depends, because I don't know, like, of course there is a fear of what will happen next, because, like, I know for a fact already that I don't want to sing, you know, when I will be old. Like, I just don't want to sing as a countertenor. So am I going to switch? I don't know. There are so many, every year, every actually few months, there are so many different doors opening because of the amount of things that I'm doing, not only on the singing ground. that I'm actually really interested in like the next few years, because for example, like Filip Żarówski started conducting. He's still singing, but he is already conducting. Andreas Scholl, still singing, but also conducting and doing other things. He's teaching. Żarówski also has his academy. So those are the ways that they chose to go, like, go on, move forward with their careers. I don't think I will be able to leave music, because music is my life. But how am I going to change? I don't know yet. I really don't know, but definitely I don't want to sing as a countertenor, because I've seen that. I'm not going to throw any names, but I've seen people who are like, who were at their top and they were singing the like major roles, doing major concerts, and then slowly they were like asked to do the secondary roles. And I don't say it's wrong, but I don't want that. I don't want to be the one who reached some certain level and goes to like top places doing the top roles and then suddenly being asked by less prestigious places. Okay. And like kind of downgrading. This is something that I don't want to do. I want to treat it as a like proper sportsman, that it's good to leave being on the high.
Mm. So primo, uomo, or nothing at all?
Yeah, I mean, like it sounds a little bit, you know, arrogant, I guess. But like, no, this is just, again, the matter of choices. You have to make your choices. And also, like, now I've been doing so much through the past 10 years that, like, now I don't feel like I have to do so much. Like, I want to travel to see my friends, and I don't need to sing in every single festival. I don't need to sing in every single house. So, you know, it's now the matter of choosing the right things, the right places, and okay, to also have time for myself.
Okay. So, to wrap things up, I give you two silly questions where you can pick and choose. Beer or champagne?
Oh, beer definitely, but I cannot drink it now because I'm gluten-free.
Okay.
But I don't like champagne.
And the last question, Vivaldi or Beastie Boys?
Ooh, this is a difficult one. Oh, why shouldn't we match them both? No, I have to choose... Beastie Boys. Let's do Beastie Boys.
Okay.
Because if you would ask Beastie Boys or Handel, I would definitely choose Handel, but...
Good. So, thank you very much and enjoy your concert. Und ich kann nur sagen, vielen Dank für das Gespräch. Das neue Album Let's Barock ist draußen in den nächsten Tagen. Das Konzert ist jetzt hier in der Elbphilharmonie. Ich bin gespannt, wie es wird. Ich schaue es mir an. Bis zum nächsten Mal und have a good time in Hamburg.
Thank you.
Weitere Podcasts vom Hamburger Abendblatt finden Sie auf abendblatt.de/podcast.
Wolltest du auch schon immer ein mutiger Polizist werden?
Ui, ui, ui.
Und den allertiefsten Dschungel erforschen?
Wow.
Ganz allein verlorene Goldschätze finden?
Ding.
Und an den größten Dreckschrauben, die die Welt je gesehen hat?
Oh,
dann ist die D-Max DNA bestimmt auch ein Teil von dir. Denn bei D-Max fängt jede Geschichte mit dir an.
Im Herbst erwarten dich neue Serien-Highlights, spannende Abenteuer und Adrenalin pur. Freu dich auf neue Staffeln von Erfolgsformaten wie Germinator, Steel Buddies, 112, Feuerwehr im Einsatz, sowie zahlreiche Neustarts wie Feuerwache 3, Alarm in Rostock. Nur auf D-Max und bereits 7 Tage vor Ausstrahlung auf Discovery+.